This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Dave Wyman out today, getting a little cleanup on his knee.
Veteran rest day, I was going to say.
Oh, veteran. Well, he's got a little situation with the knees getting repaired, so he's out today. Mike Lefko will sit in for him today, and we'll take you through everything going on in the world of sports. Obviously, the big news being the Mariners and their march toward the postseason. Matt Festa of your Seattle Mariners will join us at 2:30. Definitely talk some football with Mark Schlereth at 3 o'clock. Ryan Neal of the Seattle Seahawks. We had that conversation with him yesterday, and we played it after the Mariner game. Different audience at that time, so we want to bring that conversation to you today at 3:30. Mike Blowers will join us at 4 for his weekly conversation in El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us at 5 o'clock, and I'm certain he's feeling very good about his Philadelphia Eagles, much like you are about your Tennessee Titans.
All right, I'm leaving. That was a night. That was a good night for Philly and all things Philly related. We helped him out like he asked last week.
Huskies beat Michigan State.
So he's going to come on just victory tour for El Hombre.
Is there anything that we could have him do for us? Is there anything the Phillies or the Eagles can do for us?
The Eagles can beat up on the rest of the NFC. Seahawks, I guess.
Okay. All right.
Well, the NFC's bad, right?
They need to return the favor. That's all I'm saying.
Beat up on everyone else. Yeah.
Speaking of the Seahawks, we touched on this a bit yesterday, and you don't want to spend too much time wallowing in the misery of what was just a dreadful game against the 49ers. But offensively, you look at it and go, okay, who is this team? And I think it takes a few weeks. There's so much youth. You got rookie tackles. You've got, rookie running back there. You're trying to figure things out. Obviously, a new quarterback in Geno Smith. So you're trying to get things figured out to see truly what is their identity. We thought this is going to be a run heavy team. This is going to be back to, Pete's philosophy of really just pounding the rock and, limiting the ability to turn the ball over, keep it out of the air. Russell was a deep threat guy. Geno's not that guy. He's going to take what the defense gives him, check down, take the easy stuff. They haven't scored a point in six quarters. They look good in the first half of the first game, and since then they've been shut out. So you look at it and go, all right, well, they hardly ran the ball. I think there were 12 combined carries for the running backs in the game against the 49ers, and that was before they got too far back where you had to start throwing the ball. But they're averaging just 3.4 yards per carry, which is the fifth worst in the league. And Pete Carroll in his press conference with the media talking about, I guess they – in a sense, had the reins on the offense, making sure that the young O-line was going to be able to hold up.
We need to trust that it was one of the concerns was protection. And so we wanted to go and see if we could protect against this pass rush, which we think is as good as we'll face. And so in that regard, we didn't want to open it up and expose the tackles any more than we had to. So that all kind of fit together. But they're holding up. They did a nice job in general. Geno's in command of what's going on, and he's real accurate with his decision-making and all. So I think it's just more freely taking advantage of what's going on rather than being concerned about our ability to hold up.
So, and I get that. So to me, that's what this season's about, Mike. And Dave and I talked about this yesterday. For those that didn't join us after the Mariner game, we were talking about this season and looking at it realistically, and sort of looking at it as, all right, this is a sort of rip the Band-Aid off moment as a Seahawk fan looking at it, going, okay. Realistically, are you going into this expecting playoffs? Are you expecting postseason Super Bowl? No. This is a really young, inexperienced team that still has question marks. The guys figuring out who they're going to be. And the one thing Dave was saying that I absolutely agree with is let these guys play. Don't panic when Tariq Woolen or Kobe Bryant or Charles Cross or Lucas or any of these guys make a mistake. They're going to make rookie mistakes. Just going to have to kind of bite your lip and go, that's part of it. But this is so valuable for them, because what it's going to turn into next season, presumably, and the season after that, is the development of your core moving forward. And they're in their live action, real action, games that matter. This isn't preseason. These are games that matter. It counts. But it's the postseason isn't hanging in the balance. So they don't really have that pressure on them, but you're still getting that valuable time.
And it's good because progress comes quicker through trial by fire. And I can't think of anything better for two young rookie offensive tackles than having to face Joey Bosa That might be one of the most fearsome edge guys and defensive ends in the league, and you throw him out there. And I know we talked a lot about how good it was, how impressive it was that two rookies are starting. Okay, that's great. That means the draft picks have done well. But let's not underestimate how much of a learning curve it is to actually play in the NFL. So they're out there. Now they're learning, and it's going to be a long, maybe slow process. And that's probably what Pete Carroll is hinting at. Look, they're out there. They are starting, and that's huge, and that's important. But we can't just let them have to pass block for 3 seconds. We can't let them be isolated on a guy like Joey Bosa. So in that vein, it does make sense. I think now, okay, if you're going to open it up, what does that look like? Because these last six quarters have been less than stellar. You can't have that.
Yeah, that comment would make more sense to me if they had been, hey, we're just handing the ball off, conservative. Let's keep it on the ground. Let's go 3 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards. Hopefully we pick up first downs. We'll take some of the underneath stuff the defense has given us. That isn't, again, they carried the ball 12 times, and that's eliminating Geno's two rushes with the running backs. And that was early. They were only down 6-0 at the end of the first quarter. It wasn't like, hey, you had to throw the ball because you were getting your butt kicked right out of the gate. That's not true. So I'm a little curious as to what was going on. And just in terms of we're going to lean on the run, you didn't see that in this game where it figured this would be a perfect game to do that.
I think that was a Pete way of saying, look, the offensive line was kind of manhandled in that game. They needed to keep guys back. They didn't have any sustained front to create room to run. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers were in the backfield. And I think on a lot of those plays, it seemed like Geno Smith, pass plays as well, did not have time to go to his first look. You know, his first read was taken away. Mm-hmm. The Niners learned from week one. And then he didn't have time to figure out what was going on. A lot of those dump offs to Tyler Lockett resulted in the fact that Lockett scrambled around and was open. And the fact that Geno clearly had to look away and find something else. So I think that's more of Pete Carroll saying, look, we just couldn't run the ball because we were absolutely dominated at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And to me, this is going to be, we're going to see this again. This is going to happen again. It's because it's inexperience, because it's youth, because you're still figuring out who these players are. And to me, that's what this season is about figuring out these guys and developing them and letting trial by fire. Hey, man, we're throwing you in the deep end. We're going to see if you can swim. That's what this is. And it's kind of if you're looking for a silver lining to a season you look at and go, well, it's probably not going to be great. That's the silver lining because you're going to see it pay off in spades next year, the year after. These are valuable reps. These are valuable games for these guys, whether they go out there and get their tail kicked or not. As far as Geno goes, I think he's kind of the perfect guy for what they're going through right now. I think he's stable. He's accurate. Is he electric? No. Is he going to bring? He's not the quarterback to bring you back from a deficit like that. That's not who he is. He's not a guy that's going to be chucking the ball down the field. It's not his strength. But Pete Carroll talking about, he's a guy that does have command of the offense, and they need to let him loose.
You know, if there was any question of how long it would take him to get acclimated and all that, that's gone. He's clearly in command of it and poised, and we need to not hold back at all. And I kind of implied that, you know, we could have thrown the football more with the opportunities that we had, and with the trust that we have in him, we need to do that. And so, when it's given to us, we got to take advantage of it, and we don't have to hold back at all.
Yeah, why hold back at all anyway? Yeah, do it. You're not developing Geno for the future. He's in his 30s. He's in his 10th. He's 10 years into this league. He's not your future. He's your now. He's the stopgap between who they are now and who they're going to be when they find their franchise guy, whoever that is, whether that's a free agent, whether somebody you trade for, somebody in the draft, however they acquire that guy. But for the transition, this is a transition period. I think he's kind of the perfect guy for that. I think he fits what they're trying to do. He's going to take care of the ball for the most part, even though he threw in the double coverage last week. For the most part, he's going to take care of the ball. He's not going to be taking the chances down the field unless somebody's wide open. Yeah, he can make those throws, but things kind of have to be perfect for him to truly be electric out there, if you will. I think he's kind of who you saw. He's a guy who's not going to throw for a ton of yards. He'll be accurate and take what the defense gives you.
And I'm curious to see what open it up looks like. Because, you know, I thought for what you mentioned, what Geno Smith is, opening it up is kind of what that first drive looked like in the opener, what most of that first half looked like in the opener. You're not going to see a lot of deep shots. You're going to see a lot of moving personnel around. You're going to see the tight ends get involved, which we did not see against the 49ers. As we joked and talked about, okay, will this be the year they get the tight ends involved? And they were very active in week one, only 4 total receptions in week two. And I have to think again that was more of, okay, they need to stay back and block and help Nick Bosa, I said Joey earlier, but help block on these terrific defensive ends. So maybe that's spacing the tight ends more out there. They did mention the Seahawks before this game, how versatile it can make the offense. So that seems to be what you can do with Geno Smith to open things up. It's not going to be necessarily, all right, throw it long to DK Metcalf, even though, hey, that's probably a good play because one of those passes to DK Metcalf, he threw it up there and DK just jumped up and got it.
Catch.
So I don't know if that's what you want the offense to be in terms of opening it up, but just spacing and spreading everything out allows the defense to back off and kind of respect the run game because ultimately it still boils down to the Seahawks wanting to run the football.
Yeah.
And I know you have to get away from that in a sense to give some space, but opening up the pass might allow for some space for the run because we really haven't seen a lot of the run game yet.
No, you haven't. I'm curious
like
to see
it.
To me, everything's on the table. I think that's kind of a luxury, and I know it's you know, in one way it's negative because you're looking at the season going, well, they're not going anywhere this year. That's let's be realistic. That's not being negative. This is just calling it what it is. There's a lot of youth and inexperience on this team, and they're going to develop, and they're going to make rookie mistakes, and then they'll have great moments, and they'll make great plays, and they'll come back and do something where you scratch your head going, what was that? I mean, that's just the nature of it. So, you know, to me, that allows a certain level of freedom, like, all right, we want to run this play. Let's run this play. You want to throw the ball 50 yards? Let's try it. Let's see what happens.
Well, because not too much because we saw that with DJ Dallas.
Yeah. That wasn't great. That was not great. But I can sort of appreciate what playoffs aren't hanging in the balance. They're just not. So if there are things you want to work on or things you think you could incorporate down the road, let's work on them. Yeah, maybe there's some risk attached to some of it. That was maybe a little extreme because you ran two plays in a row where the quarterback didn't touch the ball in the red zone. You had the Wildcat play right before that, and then DJ Dallas throwing it right to the 49ers defender. So, yeah, didn't work out. But I think there are opportunities here, and this is a good one this week. The Atlanta Falcons, I'm looking at all these different power rankings. They're one of the few teams that's consistently listed behind the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, they're in tough shape.
There's very little thought about the Falcons being much of anything. Now, could they beat the Seahawks? Certainly they could. I would expect, as I was going through and I said I had this team at five or six. That was one of the teams I looked at and said they'll win that game. Now, they could very easily lose it. Seahawks are not head and shoulders above anybody.
No.
So if they lose to anybody, it's not going to be how did that happen? But if they can play somewhere in between what we saw in this last week in the first half of the Broncos, I think at home should hopefully be enough to beat the Falcons.
I know you and Dave will get into this more, and we'll have actually the Falcons play-by-play broadcaster, Wes Durham, on tomorrow at 4 to give a kind of an in-depth look at the Falcons. But they seem to be in a similar situation as the Seahawks. They have a guy who was a starter, then kind of a longtime backup in Marcus Mariota. They have a young team where maybe their best weapon is a rookie wide receiver and a second-year tight end. So they have a team where you should be able to get a little bit more going than against one of the best defenses in football in the 49ers. And I'm almost curious to see where the Seahawks go from here. I would say this is almost like a true reset because, Bob, you know, you had the emotion, the overriding emotion in week one that really catapulted the Seahawks to the win. Then you had that letdown where Pete Carroll admitted, and we talked about it, that lingered for too long, that fog that the Seahawks were in, going on the road, still on that emotional high of beating the 49ers. Now you crash back down to earth. So how do they reset? That'll be a fascinating dynamic to watch in this game coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to build a little confidence against an opponent that's struggling maybe more than you are to figure out their identity, as you just talked about. So we'll talk more about that tomorrow, obviously, with their play-by-play guy when we get the voice of the opponent going. Meanwhile, Mariners get a big win yesterday, and it was big in that they avoided a sweep. It was a very disappointing series. You lose 3-4 to an Angels team that's, I think they were officially eliminated yesterday with that loss, which, I mean, they were eliminated. They weren't going anywhere anyway.
It is funny, though.
Yeah, that mathematically, it's official after that loss. But only 16 games left in the season. You know, you're looking at who's chasing you. We're all rooting for the Orioles to lose. Now you better root for the White Sox to lose. They're playing well, and they're right there. I think they're 4.5 games up on the White Sox. You look at them and go, okay, these are all teams. We talked about the schedule being light, and these are all sub-500 teams, but they like to play spoiler. They get to play loose. They get to, kind of like we were just talking about with the Seahawks, when there's nothing really at stake, you can play with a looseness you otherwise wouldn't, and maybe try some things you otherwise wouldn't that will work. And I'm not saying in baseball you're trying these new things, but maybe there's some players out there where there's no pressure, and they just perform better in that setting, and they can really disrupt what's going on with what the Mariners are trying to achieve. But They've got to be able to be better than that against teams that have nothing on the line. And the A's, who they'll play tonight, game one of that series, is a team with zero on the line. There's going to be 37 people in the stands. The guy banging the drum, and then a couple of his friends, and that'll be it. But these are teams you beat. You win the series. I'm not saying you sweep. It'd be great if they did, but win the series. That's the goal in every one of these. It's always the goal. But with 16 games left, you need to win these series. All the remaining series, you need to win them. I don't care if you win the first game, the first two, the last two, the first and third, whatever it is. Just win the series.
Are we going to go complete fatalist and say there's a concern they lose to the A's?
Tonight, or
so
just
they lose the series? Because last time they were in Oakland, this very second half of the season, they lost 2 of 3. And that's where that danger might creep in that you were talking about. Because the A's, now what do they have? They have all their top prospects up. They are loaded with prospects that they got in the Atlanta trade. They have a ton of players and the ones they got back from the Yankees. And one of those guys, Shea Langeliers, had a huge series against the Mariners when they were in Oakland last time. So if there is a fear, it would be along those lines that, yeah, the A's are just going to come out and play free and have a lot of fun. And you have young guys who have nothing to lose and a chance to prove themselves for the future. But all that being said, I think the Mariners are much better. And they showed that yesterday.
Yeah, they showed that. And part of it is, you know, getting the rest of these guys to step up in the absence of Julio and Gino and Cal Raleigh, your three biggest producers, your three best home run hitters, if you will. And Ty Francis now, you know, hit his 20th. So he's in there. But he's been scuffling big time over the past couple of months. Mitch Haniger has been scuffling, ended an 0-for-20 slump. And then the other guys, you know, whether J.P. Crawford has looked better in the leadoff spot, he comes up with a triple, another hit, working walks. So maybe these other guys need to pick up the slack. And I know that's easy to say, like, do better. Okay, well, it's not like they're not trying, but what is it they need to do? Whatever it is, I don't care if it's voodoo in the clubhouse, do it. Whatever it takes for you to pick up the slack in the absence of these guys, get it figured out, because there's just too much at stake here. And yeah, there is concern. I see it on Twitter. I was telling you in the show notes last night, you know, during that 3-game losing streak, I'm getting all these tweets from people. Oh, typical Mariners. They're going to choke it away. It's going to be another year of no playoffs. And if this happens, DePoto should be fired. Service should be. I mean, just one after another. I'm like, really?
Now, was that before or after the game yesterday?
It was before.
Okay.
It was before.
So what was it? What was the response after the game?
Yesterday was that's the beauty of it, is I kind of like that extreme reaction because it speaks to how invested people are. You're reacting in the minute. And in those moments, I'm kind of along. I'm not saying, you know, this is typical Mariners are going to do it, but I was mad. I was mad. I'm like, you scored 2 runs in 2 games? What the hell's going on here? And I'm mad. You guys got to pick it up. You need to figure this out, Winker and Frazier and JP and everybody else. You got to get it figured out. You can't just rely on these three guys to carry the load. So, yeah, I was right there with them and just being frustrated. But, you know, this guy should be fired. That guy should be fired. He blew it. They're going to blow it again. No, I'm not there. But I was surprised how many people were. I was surprised how many people were saying, this team's not making the playoffs. I'm like, really? You think these other teams are going to play at a clip that they need to, which is extreme, and the Mariners are going to face plant, which is kind of extreme. You need 2 extremes to happen in order for that to be realistic.
I think that's just defaulting to the pure fatalistic, absolute worst case scenario. And at this point, is it understandable? Yes, even if it's not realistic, because we can sit here and rationally talk about how it's not realistic, about that 99% chance of making the playoffs. But from a fan standpoint, until it actually gets to that magic number of single digits and until you actually see that final clinching win, I kind of understand it. Not that I condone it. I don't condone it, because this is a very good team and this is a different team than you've seen over the past 20 plus years. But I understand the fear until it actually gets down to those final games.
Until you lock it in. Yeah. I mean, there's always a chance. Could they blow it? Yeah, certainly they could. Do I think they will? No, I don't think they will. This has got to be from an Angels fan. I'm just looking at it now. The 253 had sent in a text yesterday, let's go Angels, going for the sweep today. So that's an Angels fan, but it says they'll be typical Mariners, they're still going to choke it away. Well, 253, you just check in at the end of the season. Don't hide if they make it. Don't hide. Don't be that one with the loud talk.
We do have that feud with the Angels, so all right, good to reignite it here.
Yeah, and somebody else said sacrifice a live chicken like Serrano. Yeah, whatever it takes, whatever you got to do. You know, if there's something that's going to make these guys loose and allow them to play free, then do that. I don't know what it is, but figure that out, because it can't be, well, these three guys are gone in the lineup. What are we supposed to do? Well, your pitchers are giving you almost without exception every night a chance to win. Almost. Yeah, there's going to be duds out there every once in a while. But this rotation has been spectacular. And they are giving you every opportunity to win just about each and every night. Figure it out. All right, let's take two.
Right. The NFL announced its initial list of 129 players eligible for the 2023 Hall of Fame. Nine of those guys are eligible for their first time, including Cam Chancellor. The other eight? Chris Johnson, Jari Evans, Dwight Freeney, Navarro Bowman, James Harrison, Darryl Revis, and Shane Leckler.
I mean, as it pertains to Cam, we've talked about this so many times, and we used to always talk about it with the professor, John Clayton, about there aren't these magic numbers for football Hall of Fame, whereas in baseball, you look at a guy with 500 home runs or 300 wins, or, you know, there are certain markers, you know, and those change over time. I don't even, you'll ever have another 300-game winner in baseball, but it's a lot more convoluted and based on the person that's representing that player, the person that makes the case. That's how they do it in the NFL. For those that aren't aware, all the voters get into a room and, you know, somebody is speaking on behalf of Cam Chancellor. I don't know who that, let's just pretend it's Mike Sando. And he stands up there and makes the case. Here's why he should be a Hall of Famer and goes through all that. But there aren't those markers, so I don't know if Cam has the numbers.
And it's tough for a safety. I know the professor would always say that, too. It's very tough for a safety
Get in. Like, Dwight Freeney, I think, is in. Mm-hmm. That's a guy, you look at his numbers, his career numbers, he should be in. Navarro Bowman, I don't know. James Harrison, he should be in. These guys have played an eternity.
I'm glad Dave's not here, because we're talking about a punter, potentially in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he wouldn't.
He's not in.
He shouldn't even be mentioned in Dave's world. So, yeah, some of these guys, you look at the length of their career, and then on the defensive side, how do you measure success? How do you measure, you know, he's not an interception guy per se, but he was an intimidator. He's part of a generational defense, one of the great defenses of all time in the Seattle Seahawks Legion of Boom. So I don't know. It's an interesting debate, but yeah, I think he deserves it.
And in wild card watch, the Mariners begin the day a half game back of the Rays for the second wild card spot, and a 5-game lead on the Orioles and 5.5-game lead over the White Sox for the final wild card spot. Tampa begins a series with Houston tonight, while the Orioles are taking on the Tigers and the White Sox host the Guardians.
So yeah, I guess we're in a weird spot of pulling for the Houston Astros, which makes me feel dirty. I have to take a shower. Pulling for the Tigers, and then I guess pulling for the Guardians.
Yeah, the White Sox play a lot of the AL Central down the stretch. That could be good, that could be bad, because there's a pretty heated division race going on still in that stretch between the Twins, Guardians, and White Sox. And tiebreaker-wise, yes, the White Sox are the more dangerous team right now. They're slightly behind the Orioles. They would have the tiebreaker over the Mariners. But, you know, we talked about this, and you and Dave mentioned it yesterday. As long as the Mariners take care of business, they're fine because of how few games are left in the season. Yeah, so it's a good spot to be in compared to years past.
I'd like to see those teams lose just to make it easier to breathe, but I don't want to rely on other teams doing something for the Mariners in order to get them in. Just handle your business and don't even worry about what they do. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknife-prostate. Coming up, Mariners begin a series in Oakland tonight. We're going to get into that with Matt Festa of your Seattle Mariners. He'll join us next here with Wyman and Bob, with Mike Lefko in today. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
It is Wyman and Bob. Mike Lefko in for Dave Wyman today. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. It's time for our player spotlight. We get a chance to speak to a member of the bullpen of your Seattle Mariners, Matt Festa, with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, Matt?
Hey, how you doing?
We're
happy to be on.
Hey, we always appreciate you taking time, and I've got to wonder what it's like for you at this point. You know, as fans, I'm out here. I'm living and dying with every game. I'm counting down. There's 16 games left, and they've got a 5-game lead on this team, and they're up by 4 on this team. And how much are you guys scoreboard watching, if you will, looking at the? I mean, because the standings, the 1-2-3 in the wild card race seems to shift almost every single night, and the teams creeping up behind you. The Orioles and White Sox are there. Are you guys? I can't imagine you're not paying attention to that stuff, right?
We kind of just look at it towards the end of the game after our game is played, but we're just focused on ourselves. And you know, as long as we take care of business on the field day in and day out, we'll be in the position that we want to be. So we kind of just take it one day at a time and worry about winning the game on the field that day.
But Matt, has that added a little bit more maybe excitement down the stretch? I know the baseball season can be long, and you go through the grind, you go through the dog days of August into now September and towards the end. After games, when you guys have had a win, everyone's dancing out there celebrating the bullpen, does that add a little more juice to this end of the season?
Oh, of course. I mean, we're all talking about, you know, where we're going to end up if we do keep this alive and make the playoffs. We're talking about Toronto, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, at home in Seattle. We don't know what it's going to be, but, you know, the excitement after each win just gets more sweeter, you know, and we're just happy to be in a position that we're in, and we're just going to keep doing it every day.
Yeah, how much fun are you allowing yourself to have? You guys are very tunnel vision, just focused on that game that night. But I mean, this as a fan, I can just tell you, and I know a lot of our listeners and everybody on Twitter, everybody's so invested in this team and the outcome of every single game. And this season has been so much fun. Are you able to sit back at all and reflect, or is that something that happens after the season?
Maybe sit back and reflect on it as a whole, but I mean, I think you guys and the fans can notice us having fun out there every day, smiling in between plays after something cool, like J-Rod or Gino does something crazy in the field, us dancing. Like, we have so much fun day in and day out. We can't wait to get to the clubhouse and, you know, overcome the challenges that a new day arises for us. So, you know, we love coming to the ballpark, and I think that's why we've been so successful.
How much do the personalities on this team help keep everyone loose? It seems like there is just a wondrous blend of unique personalities on this team.
I think the personalities are the reason why we're so successful. Again, like I remember Gino coming into the clubhouse and Winker coming into the clubhouse spring training, you know, kind of sparking a little bit more personality out of a Mitch Haniger, out of, you know, a Marco Gonzalez and Robbie. You know, it's been so wonderful having these people on our team, and I truly think that's why we have been so successful, is because these personalities keep it so light, so fun. You know, hey, don't worry about it. You know, get them next time. We're, like, so upbeat. It's a lot of fun playing with these guys.
How much do you guys sort of co-mingle with the position players, if you will? It's years past, you look at it, pitchers kind of stick with pitchers, you know, whether it's the bullpen and starters, and then the position players are kind of doing their thing with each other, talking and joking and everything. But it seems like this team, there's much more crossover, if you will. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There's a lot of crossover. You know, in the clubhouse, you see people sitting playing cards with other positions. You know, there's no clicks. It's been a lot of fun just seeing everybody's kind of personalities mesh perfectly in the clubhouse. It's a lot of fun.
Matt, I know on the road, it's kind of a little bit of a different routine for you guys because, you know, you're all together. You don't have distractions of home life, or you don't have a normal home routine. How has a long road trip like this helped you guys come together? Maybe not now because it's the end of the season, but some of those long road trips early on in the year, what have you guys done to kind of build that bond?
The long flights definitely help build a bond. You know, you're on those planes, you're flying 5-6 hours across the country back and forth. Those early in the season were brutal, but, you know, we're bonding. They helped us form a good relationship. And now these shorter flights, you know, we get to relax and enjoy the hotels, enjoy the venues before we head to the field on the road. So I think it's a little bit easier on the body, these road trips now. But we have a lot of fun when we're on the road and get to enjoy these beautiful cities.
Where do you like pitching best outside of T-Mobile? Where do you just feel like, man, I like the mound, I like the sidelines, whatever it is. And which one is toughest for you?
I like Globe Life a lot. I like Globe Life, the new Texas Rangers Stadium. I loved Fenway in New York because I'm an East Coast guy. But the toughest is probably Houston. Houston is definitely one of my least favorite places. That's really about it. I feel comfortable everywhere else. But, you know, I've had a lot of fun experiencing new stadiums. This is the first time in my career I got to, you know, really knock out a couple more ballparks.
Is when you say Houston, is it because you got the Crawford boxes there? It's such a short poke for a player, for a hitter up there, or is it more just about facing cheaters?
no, it's the whole atmosphere. Houston is a very hard place to play. You know, those fans are riled up. You got the Crawford boxes. Both shots down the line are a little narrow, so, you know, it just feels like everything's on top of you. But it's something you got to just push through, not get distracted, and just your job.
I know you're excited to sneak that one in there, Bob. That was well played.
Anytime I can take a shot at the Astros, I'm going to do it.
Hey, Matt, I know in the bullpen you guys have a lot of time. You don't necessarily know if you're getting into a game. not to ask you specifically what you're talking about, but is that where some ideas flow? Maybe you're kind of talking through pitches, experimenting on different grips to use. We've heard some things about how guys have kind of modeled their pitches after each other or just experimented with things. I mean, what are some of the conversations going on in that bullpen?
Yeah, it's basically like the first four innings, as long as our starter's doing, having a great day out there and we don't have to lock it in too early. It's kind of just a real big thought bubble workshop area where we are bouncing ideas off each other, talking through things that, you know, the previous pitcher went through the night before, talking through things that, you know, we'll look at old video versus new video. Like, what do you see? What do I see? What am I feeling? So it is like a big workshop, those first four innings, but also just a lot of nonsense and laughs and goofing around.
Hey, do you, I don't know how much you get dialed into, you know, MVP races and things like that. It seems like it's a two-man race between Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani in the American League. And I'm just curious, as a pitcher, when you see what Ohtani has done as a pitcher, I think he's got a 2.48 ERA, something like that. He's also hit 34 home runs, and he's this ultimate threat, something we've never seen in our lifetime in the game. Yet then there's Aaron Judge with 59 home runs, and he's a triple crown threat. Which blows you away more? Which are you more, just as a fan, baseball fan, more impressed by?
This is a conversation that's been going on a lot in our bullpen. I'm on the side of Aaron Judge. I think, you know, leading the MLB in almost every single offensive category is, you know, warranted for the MVP. I think Ohtani's going to, you know, come out and do this every year. And if not this year, then what year are you going to take it away from him, or someone's going to, you know, sneak in there? I'm more appreciative of the Aaron Judge year. But Ohtani, you know, you can't discredit him at all. I think it's going to be a really tight race, and it's going to be a close second.
When you face a guy like that, an Ohtani or an Aaron Judge, can you appreciate it in the moment, or how do you compartmentalize and say, all right, this guy's good and I really enjoy what he's doing, but I have to bear down and get him out?
Yeah, you know, you kind of just reflect on it after the fact and kind of realize, you know, the pitches you had to make, the pitches that batter, you know, had to fight off. You know, you're like, you kind of like, oh, that pitch usually works against other guys, but, you know, they'll waste it, kind of battle for a couple more pitches. You have to be a little more fine with, you know, some of your locations. But you're definitely aware of it, but you kind of reflect on it post at bat and not really in there. You just go out there, compete with your plan A, and just do your best, get them out.
So if we were to put a bat in Matt Festa's hand, a pitch hint situation, how would it look? How would it go for you?
It will not look very athletic. I am not. I mean, I got cut from my high school, my sophomore year, as a third baseman. I had to retry out as a pitcher in the spring. Like, I was not a hitter. I have one at bat though in college. We were blowing a team out my senior year. So technically, I'm 1-for-1, batting 1,000 with an RBI in college. So that can't get taken away from me.
Nice. That's so yeah. Different, though. Typically, it seems like we hear about guys as they grew up, they were pitchers. They were always like the best player on the team, the best hitter. And then they turned into a pitcher, and it looks like they never held a bat before. But yours sounds like you started that a little earlier.
Yeah, I wasn't very talented growing up. You know, I kind of just had always had a good arm. I love the game, so I kept just trying to slowly get better and better. You know, I wasn't the best on the team, wasn't the all-star, but, you know, I loved pitching, and I kind of just heavily invested in that at a young age, around like 14, 15, and it took me down this road.
Hey, Matt, great to talk to you, man. Really appreciate you taking the time, and you got an entire state, an entire community that's absolutely living and dying with every moment with this team. So enjoy the ride. We can't wait for the postseason, and look forward to talking again.
Absolutely. We're excited to bring the playoffs back to Pacific Northwest. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Matt. There you go. There's Matt Festa of your Seattle Mariners taking some time with us. Really, really good guy to talk to. Appreciate the conversation with him. A reminder that Friday, September 30th is Fan Appreciation Night. That's a 6:40 first pitch against the Oakland A's. You can catch the final fireworks show of the year. Plus, the first 20,000 fans are going to head home with a Mariners team poster. You can get tickets for that at Mariners.com.
Also, this should be a big selling point. Our final time out there at Edgar's.
Oh, that's right.
In the regular season.
That's right. Yeah. They should get a bunch of special guests
for
us.
I think it'll be worth coming out there and seeing us. I'll just allude to that.
Yeah, they've implied that there'll be some special guests. We'll see. Yeah, you're right. Our final time out at Edgar. So it's a huge night. It's just became huge. All right, there's been a breakout rookie for the Seahawks so far this season. We'll take a little closer look at who that is coming up. It's Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko in for Dave today. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Matt Festa, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that conversation, it will be available on the podcast page after the show, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab, click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you each and every day. And what do they do after that, Thumb?
Subscribe.
Subscribe. That's right. It's that simple.
And then listen, hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully.
How about this? Instead of just subscribing now, they get a friend to subscribe. We're like a pyramid scheme.
They need to start recruiting.
You get two friends, you get three more friends, and then they all subscribe to our podcast.
But then there's got to be some sort of payoff for them, right?
We'll send you something. Send you a t-shirt.
Send you an autographed picture of Thumb. It's going to be great. He'll be holding a paddleball racket. Or is it paddle or racket?
Pickleball.
Pickleball. What did I say?
Pickleball. Oh, paddleball. Oh, you can buy my two activities. The only things I do.
Paddleboarding and pickleball. Is it a racket or a paddle?
Paddle.
It's a paddle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'll autograph one of those and send it to you. Meanwhile, this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. So looking for some of the positives in a dreadful game against the 49ers. And, you know, it's two games in. I feel like they've got a good chance this weekend, as we talked about, against the Atlanta Falcons, who are not good. So it's a battle of two teams that aren't great, and we'll see what happens. I would think the Seahawks should have an advantage at home. But one of the highlights of that game was Tariq Woolen coming off the edge there, blocking the field goal attempt at being scoop and score from Mike Jackson. But he's had a couple of good – he's had rookie moments, but he's had some good moments out there. And Pete Carroll on with Brock and Salk talking about him.
He played well again, did a nice job, had a couple fits in the running game, and just continues to gain more confidence. He's – our corners are covering guys. You know, we're getting in trouble with some PIs right now, and they'll learn how to be a little more poised in the moment and clean those things up. But it's because they're right on guys that's happening. And
he's right. I mean, they're in good position now. That's about trusting their technique, turning, looking for the ball, all those things. But he Tariq Woolen looks the athlete that he was, sort of propped up as being. I mean, we talked about his 40 time and his size and all these, and he's really raw. But man, he looks like he's got the tools, and we said it yesterday when Dave and I were talking about it. Just let him plow through the mistakes. Same with Kobe Bryant. Same with your two tackles. Any of the rookies you are playing out there on a regular basis, just let them go through it. It's I know at times it won't be pretty. It'll be frustrating, but it's gonna work so much better going into next season, the season after that. Had they come in with presumptive starters there, and they're just looking for a spot here, a spot there on special teams. This is gonna really, really speed up their development.
I'll go back to what Quandre Diggs said during training camp, and he was being asked about these young guys, and he said when he saw that a guy like Woolen would be matched up on DK or on Tyler Lockett, he would leave them alone. He would go to the other side and make sure they had that one-on-one matchup because he wanted to see them go up against two of the best receivers in the NFL. Yeah. And I think that's what we're seeing from Woolen. I really like that he is playing without fear. He'll make a mistake, but he's not afraid to make a mistake. And as you heard Pete Carroll say, as you just mentioned, that will lead to perfect technique. That'll lead to being able to get away with something unseen because wide receivers and cornerbacks know how to jostle, know how to put their hands in a position to get away with stuff that officials can't see. He will learn all that. But the fact that he's out there and he's jumping headfirst into it, very encouraging.
Yeah. And then Pete also explaining why he feels like he's just perfect for the job.
He's perfect to do what that job calls for. That's getting off a great start. And really bending, really flexibly to turn that corner. And then that little burst that he has that nobody else has, he's going to be a tremendous threat.
He is. I mean, we talked about there was no shortage of athletic ability and his size and everything about him is wildly appealing. It's a matter of refining it. It's a matter of becoming a seasoned professional, if you will. And again, I can't emphasize enough how valuable the season's going to be as long as they don't have a knee-jerk reaction. And it doesn't sound like Pete's got that going at all. It seems like he understands, listen, A, they don't have the guys in front of them that you would go, well, how are you not playing this guy in place of the rookie? I mean, you don't have those locked in entrenched starters when you had Richard Sherman and you had, Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Brandon Brown or all those. You don't have that. So that, again, is kind of a luxury to a season without a ton of expectation. These guys are going to develop. We're going to get a very clear picture of who they are by the end of this season.
I think you can understand now why coaches and GMs and personnel are seduced by athleticism, by that raw potential that you could mold into something like this. Because Tariq Woolen was supposed to be the guy that needed time. Kobe Bryant was the more polished corner coming out of that draft. Now he's moved to nickel, so he's not on those outside corner spots. But Tariq Woolen was the guy that was supposed to take some time. And if Trey Brown's healthy, I don't think we're even talking about Woolen playing. He's a backup. Who knows if he's gotten in? So the fact that he's been thrown into this situation because of a whole rash of injuries, and he's held up. He's held up fairly well. Highly encouraging to see. And that's why, Bob, when you're talking about building and growing to next year, with all these draft picks and with all these rookies playing early on, it should be very encouraging that they're succeeding early. Because you're going to have more high draft picks next year. You have a Broncos first-round pick. You have your own first-round pick. You have what we assume will be pretty high draft picks in those rounds.
And, in both situations.
Yeah. And so if these guys are already paying off or showing flashes of it, that should give you some optimism moving forward about what a young core can do over the next year or two.
Yeah, Russell Wilson hate aside, which I'm not a part of, Broncos don't look like a very good team.
We'll get into that later.
Yeah,
it's
we'll talk about it. But just looking at who they how they looked against the Seahawks and then this past weekend, Seahawks could have two really nice draft picks.
They arguably were worse. I'm curious to hear what Mark Schlereth has to say, because I think for a home opener, they were arguably worse on Sunday. Because it was the Texans.
Yeah.
They won, sure. But it wasn't a
resounding victory.
It was an entertaining car crash to watch.
Yeah,
you could not look away from that.
Yeah, so I think you're right in terms of you're developing these guys you drafted right now. They're going to have that head start, if you will, that they otherwise wouldn't have with a team that's got all these starters entrenched. And you're kind of in a good position, it feels like. I mean, we're two games in, so you don't want to get too far ahead of things. But just the way things look, if you're just gauging it now, feels like you might have two really solid draft picks, like high up there. Maybe some top 15 picks, a couple of them. So that's a pretty cool place to be. And I don't, maybe your quarterback's in there.
You don't always want to be there, but now. You don't want to be the Jets. You know, the Jets get excited about their constant top 10 picks.
Yeah, if you're constantly in that position, there's nothing good about that. This is a rarity for the Seahawks. We're always talking about, well, who are they going to take with 26? Who are they going to take with 28? Are they going to trade out of the first round? That's always the conversation. Now, I'm trying to find the silver line. I'm trying to be positive here, Thumb. Trying to be positive about what could be a bumpy season, what we presume it will be. But the Broncos don't look great. And you could be in a really, really good draft spot. And hopefully it's just this one year and then you're back to business. But, you know, while you're here, take advantage of it.
And not to keep piling on the Broncos. Okay, maybe I will. But we will do that later. The Broncos also don't look great, and they haven't played anyone good yet.
No.
The Broncos have to play their division six times, and their division is arguably the best in football. Certainly, the Chiefs and the Chargers, you're not going to beat easily. You could. I mean, it's the NFL. Who knows what happens week to week. But
it doesn't feel likely.
Yeah, the Broncos are 1-1, having played two teams that are not expected to have contending seasons when it comes to the Super Bowl race, and the Chargers and Chiefs are.
Yeah, hey, a reminder that Seattle Sports has your chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the Atlanta Falcons on September 25th. For info and a direct link to enter the sweepstakes, just text the word WIN, W-I-N. Text the word WIN to our new text line, 866-979-3776. Again, text the word WIN to 866-979-3776 for a link to enter. Well, he was on the call for the broadcast on Sunday, and Mark Schlereth is going to share his thoughts with us next here. It's Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko in for Dave. You're listening to 710 Seattle Sports on 710.